Shattering Myths, where we expose not only the misconceptions associated with religion and politics, but also those myths associated with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news, I'm going to try to explain why these things are happening, what the motivations behind the various events might be, as well as what they portend for our future. In our second hour, as usual, we're going to engage God on His terms by way of His covenant through His Torah teaching, ultimately replacing religion with reason. Our phone number today for any who would like to question, criticize, or affirm something that is said on this program is 877-376-45. I'm going to begin in a rather isolated place this morning with something that most of our listeners probably don't even know occurred. A 7.7 magnitude earthquake struck in Canada and triggered a small tsunami that ultimately hit the island chain of Hawaii. A 7.7 magnitude earthquake is massive. I mean, anything over 6 is huge, and this is a geometric scale. But to have a nearly 8 magnitude earthquake strike along the coast in North America is a very, very significant event with ominous undertones that was simply not reported. Related to all the moving and shaking that is going on, I'm sure everyone is aware that there is a massive storm that is lurking off the northeastern Atlantic coast of the United States and Canada. The BBC reports it this way. Hurricane Sandy is closing in on highly populated areas of the U.S. East Coast, threatening storm surges and devastating flooding. In New York City, thousands of people have been ordered to leave their homes. Public transportation has been shut down. The New York Stock Exchange is closed. Forecasters fear that Sandy will become a superstorm when it collides with cold weather fronts from the west and north. Sandy has already killed 60 people, sweeping through the Caribbean this past week. Reuters is no less dramatic as it relates to this storm. Hurricane Sandy, the monster storm bearing down on the East Coast, strengthened on Monday after hundreds of thousands moved to higher ground. Public transportation is shut down in America's largest cities, and the stock market suffered its first weather-related closure in three decades. About 50 million people from the Mid-Atlantic to Canada were in the path of the nearly 1,000-mile-wide storm, which forecasters said could be the largest to hit the U.S. mainland in recorded history. It was expected to topple trees, damage buildings, cause power outages, and trigger heavy flooding. The U.S. National Hurricane Center said on Monday morning the Category 1 storm had strengthened as it turned toward the coast and was moving at 15 to 20 miles per hour. It was beginning to bring life-threatening storm surges and coastal hurricane winds in addition to heavy snow in the Appalachian Mountains. Now, we're going to talk about this storm because of several reasons, how vulnerable the United States is, how unique this storm is, and how it fits into scriptural prophecy. It has been labeled by those in its path as Frankenstorm. This is a unprecedented event. Nothing like this has ever occurred, at least during the time that written language and therefore historical records could have been kept on the North American continent. Yes, the winds aren't as strong as the Category 4s and 5 storms that have pummeled the Gulf Coast. This storm is packing winds that have increased from 70 to 75 to 80 and now 85 miles per hour. That makes it a strong Category 1. What is unique about this storm is the low pressure, 946 millibars, a extraordinarily once-in-a-century storm in the northeast is typically in the 960 to 970 millibar range. At 946, this is unprecedented. That is the primary monitor of a storm's power. It is the largest storm in terms of diameter ever to hit the United States at 1,000 miles. Today, as the storm is still some 300 miles south of its impact zone, southeast of its impact zone, it is already influencing the weather in Chicago, on Lake Superior, where waves are now recorded at over 20 feet. Moving north-northwest at 20, with the targeted landfall now between either Baltimore and Washington, or between Baltimore, Washington, and Philadelphia. Two of the five most current and professional tracks show this storm going right between Washington, D.C. and Baltimore, Maryland, in an incredibly high populated area. About two of the five forecast tracks have the storm traveling between Baltimore and Philadelphia. And one of the five has it passing directly over New York City. The Delmarva Peninsula, which is immediately above and below Baltimore, depending on where in the city you are, is where this is most likely going to come inland. It's going to pass over Dover, Delaware, en route to Philadelphia, and ultimately surrounding New York City. It will come in south of New York City, go directly west of New York City, and ultimately curve around so that it travels north of New York City. It is an event which has 10 states that will be significantly impacted. The hurricane is expected to target initially. Well, of course, as you know, it's already hitting and hammering North Carolina and Virginia. But it, with its eye wall, it is expected to cross New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Maryland, Delaware, and Northern Virginia, in addition to Washington, D.C. And its upper right quadrant, which is the most significant part of these storms, is going to target New York, Connecticut, Rhode Island, and Massachusetts. A foot or more of rain is expected in the coastal areas and in the Appalachian and Blue Ridge Mountains, several feet of snow. A storm surge now, which is the most troubling part of this, is expected to be in excess of 11 feet in Manhattan. That will be at high tide this evening at about 9 o'clock, where you have three components contributing to the problem that we can expect in New York City. One of those is that this is a full moon and an abnormally high astronomical tide. Expected to be, if there was no storm, it was forecast to be just shy of 6 feet this evening at 9 o'clock in the New York area. You have to add to that 5 to 6 feet worth of storm surge that is being pushed by the right quadrant of this storm right against the eastern seaboard, because this storm, rather than paralleling the course of the coast, is coming perpendicular to it, which means it will have the longest and greatest impact on storm surge, a minimum of 5 to 6 feet, on top of the 5 to 6 feet of astronomical high tide because of the full moon. On top of this, you're going to have hurricane winds that will be pushing waves that could well exceed, currently offshore, they are in the 20-foot range, but even in the protected waterways, they may be 10 to 15 feet that you'll have to add to the 11-foot tide and surge components. With much of New York City, for example, much of Baltimore at sea level, and with the subway systems below sea level, this could be an unmitigated disaster in the many, many billions of dollars in terms of cost. Now, not guaranteed that's all going to occur, because the storm could get waylaid. You could have it turn more directly north. It could get delayed. It could weaken. There are so many things that could happen. But right now, if all of this comes together, we're going to have a gargantuan and deadly, very expensive event. One of the things that is unique about this storm is that it is slow moving. It will lash New York City and Philadelphia and Baltimore and Washington, D.C. for more than 48 hours. That is very uncommon for a hurricane. In fact, it's unheard of for a hurricane to provide its rain, storm surge, and winds for that long a period of time. Forecasters said that Sandy was a rare hybrid superstorm created by an Arctic jet stream wrapping itself around a tropical storm. It is really a trifecta. You've got colliding warm and cold fronts. When the warm front that is the essence of this storm collides with the two cold fronts, one from the north, one from the west, the cold air will drop down, which will increase wind speeds and power, make this storm a great deal more powerful. It is also a combination of a tropical hurricane and a traditional nor'easter, with the nor'easter collision imminent between two massive and opposing high-pressure systems and a low-pressure system, the low-pressure system of the storm and the high-pressure system that is over northeastern Canada. All of this with the most populated region of the United States and its crosshairs. 50 million people are going to be significantly affected. This is the sign, by the way, of our times. It is one of the signs, the birth pangs of the approach of the tribulation and Yahusha's ultimate return. And so in that context, we will continue to discuss this storm of the century, when shattering myths continue. I am Yada. You are encouraged to give us a call, 877-300-7645. Shattering myths. From the New York Times this morning, we read that the Hurricane Center said that surges could reach 11 feet in New York Harbor. That's prior to adding the wave action on top of that. That's just a combination of the surge and the tides, although it doesn't mention tide here. If you had an 11-foot surge on top of the 6-foot tide expected at 9 o'clock this evening, then, of course, New York City would be in severe trouble. Because on top of all of that, you have to add the waves, which will be especially destructive. Significantly higher than any previous storm. Five to six foot tide is expected just shy of 9 o'clock this evening, and there will be another one at 9 a.m. tomorrow morning. The 6 foot storm surge added to the 5 to 6 foot tide will form the base of the waves that will then roll across the lowland areas at between 10 and 20 feet. This article provides a little insight as to why New York, which is 100 miles north of where the storm is likely to make landfall, is in such a predicament beyond being in the north quadrant, the northeast quadrant of the storm. You see, the height of a surge depends to a great extent on how shallow the water is near the coast. The shallower the water is, for longer distance, the more vulnerable the area becomes. The New York area has extensive shallow water offshore and is expected to see some of the largest surges. The National Weather Service computer models were predicting the surge reaching 11 feet at places like Battery Park at the lower end of Manhattan. The surge could also coincide with the high tide expected to be around 9 p.m., also again 9 a.m. on Tuesday, but 9 p.m. this evening. The tides, they say, will be higher than usual because of the full moon. This article reads that this is a worst-case scenario for the New York Harbor area, said Alan Cope, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service. Hurricane Sandy is much larger than New York Times reports, with greater surge potential than the devastating tropical storm known as Irene last year, with winds up to 60 miles an hour over an area greater than 500 miles northeast of its center. Nearly 500 miles northeast of its center, as well as, of course, significant tropical storm winds for the full 1,000-mile diameter. Adding to the potential for damage was the hurricane's unusual track. The expected path northwest will trap water against the shores of New York and New Jersey. It's going to blow the water from east to west and pile up in Raritan Bay and also pile up in the western end of Long Island Sound. This has the potential, my friends, of being a devastating blow to the most populated areas of the United States. Many hurricanes move parallel to the coast for long distances and then are pushed by high winds. They usually veer northeast, eventually spinning out or losing their energy over the North Atlantic, but not to this time. By the time it nears New York on Monday, Hurricane Sandy will have traveled hundreds of miles from the coast for several days, packing up enormous amounts of water over the open ocean, and then we'll throw them in a perpendicular path directly against New York. The storm's winds, which are rotating counterclockwise, that's the nation of the rotation of all lows, are creating an area of high area of strong ocean waves north and northeast of the storm's center, which will amplify the surge, says Louis Ucini, the director of the National Center for Environmental Protection. As Hurricane Sandy approaches New York, forecasters expect it to hit a roadblock. Instead of veering northeast and out to sea, this storm, unlike any other, is going to move directly west, and a persistent region of high pressure over northeastern Canada and southern Greenland are going to add to the calamity, because you see, those winds are rotating clockwise. This storm Sandy is a tropical storm. A hurricane is rotating counterclockwise. What's going to happen when the two of them touch? What you're going to see is that the winds will be blowing from east to west at the top of this storm as it approaches the high pressure, which is rotating the opposite direction, but at the place where they will meet, it will be like a Venturi, both going the same direction from east to west. Once again, this is unlike any storm that has impacted the northeastern United States and could prove to be devastating. It is also a harbinger, a sign of that which is to come. More on this when we return. To Shattering Myths. We're covering what is more perhaps than just the storm of the century. It could be the most significant storm in recorded history for North America. According to the officials monitoring this storm, the bottom line for New York and New Jersey and for Long Island Sound is that they're going to have the worst of the surge. It is a highly unusual westward track that's going to contribute to another feature of this megastorm, the transition to a more of a winter storm that is expected to bring high winds and large amounts of rain and snow throughout the mid-Atlantic states, from the Appalachian Mountains all the way into the Ohio Valley. As I mentioned before, even Lake Michigan is going to see winds in excess of 50 miles an hour, and they already have waves being measured at more than 20 feet. But strong surges are only one aspect of this storm that makes it potentially deadly. You see, the storm gathered energy all the way that tropical hurricanes typically do, from convection that occurred as it passed over the relatively warm ocean water. But it moves, as this storm now moves further north and then to the west, the storm will gain less energy this way. However, what it's going to do as it encounters the trough of cold, high air that has dipped down from Canada, that's part of the jet stream, in this, when this front meets that warm air, the cold air will sink, which is going to add enormously to this storm's energy. This strengthening caused by what is known as the baroclinic forcing will enable the storm to unleash more mayhem, the officials say, as it moves inland. Typically, these storms die within miles of the time they cross the coast, and that is because they lose their source of energy, which is the warm waters beneath them. And the moment they hit the friction of land and the relatively colder, less moist nature of the land, they die. But not to this time. Because this time, as the storm hits land, that's when the cold front is going to pummel it. It's going to dive down through the top of it and will actually build this storm, making it more powerful as it moves inland. So instead, this storm is going to encounter this trough of cold, high air, that's also high pressure air, that has dipped down from Canada. This cold front will meet the warm air of the storm, and the cold air will sink, adding the strain to this storm's energy. And this thermal gradient, as the storm dips and digs in, is going to be a very important part of the energy of this beast. Hurricane Sandy, North American Agency for Monitoring Such Events has said that this hurricane is just at the tipping point. It could well cause a 100-year flood on top of all of the storm surge. Now, as I mentioned before, this is one of the signs of the last days. The return of Jews, of Yehudim, to Israel is the first thing that that we are told to look out for. That happened in both 1948 and also in 1967, 1948, Yehudim were able to return to Israel by way of the Holocaust and the decree of the United Nations. And in 1967, as a result of the Six-Day War, where Muslims tried to destroy the emerging country, they were able to enter and control Jerusalem for the first time. Speaking then of the birth pangs that will precede his return, Yosha told us that there will be false prophets, that many, if not most, will be deceived by those claiming to speak in his name. He's therefore speaking of Christianity and Islam with their false messiahs. There will be world war, which we are headed to now. We have left the world's only world war in World War II. World War I was a more regional war. World War II was global. But the war that is materializing as we watch in Syria, which is being fought between various proxies and has Europe and the United States on one side, China and Russia on the other, is a harbinger for a world war to come. We are told there would be terrorism and there will be rumors of wars, of which have become greater now than ever before. We're told that nation will rise against nation. But we're told twice that there will be megaseismos. And megaseismos is almost always translated large earthquakes in most English Bibles, but that's not what the word seismos means. Yes, seismos has been used by those monitoring earthquakes, but the word just means massive moving to and fro. It was used in Greek to speak of hurricanes, of tornadoes, of tsunamis, and of earthquakes. It is a natural event where wind, water, or earth move in a massive way. And so these hurricanes are part of the megaseismos that was predicted. They are part that earthquake that occurred, which is why I reported it in Canada at 7.7 on the Richter scale, is part of the megaseismos. The horrible onslaught for the last 2 years with record tornadoes, deadly tornadoes ripping through the center of America are all part of the megaseismos that are predicted to be like birth pangs, which means they will increase in frequency and they will increase in magnitude as we reach the last days. This is a storm of unprecedented nature, which qualifies it as a megaseismos. We're also told there will be famines and there will be pandemics. The famines are already occurring throughout Africa. We are on the cusp of having wheat with a wheat rust decimate our ability around the globe to feed the world's people. And we have massive climate change, although we do not actually have global warming. What is happening now as a result of a hurricane becoming a winter storm is an example of massive climate change, as are the horrible droughts that is rocking the middle of this country, also combined with the increase we've had in hurricanes these this last decade or so. And disease, we are on the cusp of a disease that will spread around the world far worse than any that we have yet encountered. We are told by Yosha that this will be just the beginning. There will be other fearsome sights. There will be signs even in the skies. And there will be ultimately a dissemination of his message, which means that globally the Torah will be taught. What he taught will be taught. We're even told in concluding there shall be signs in the sun and in the moon and the stars, and there will be great distress among nations with great perplexity. That means that people will be confused, which is what we see now, and we also see great distress amongst the nations. And the sea and the waves will be roaring, which is a major aspect of this particular storm. Men's hearts will fail them for fear, and some looking after those things which are coming to the earth. For the powers of heaven will be shaken, and then they shall see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with great power and great glory. In other words, he is going to return in a way that is quite different than the way he left. He won't come back looking like the fella that you see in Roman Catholic and Protestant pictures with a little halo and the flowing white robes. He's going to come back looking more like the sun, literally brilliant like a star, in great power and great glory. And while that sounds wonderful, he's not in a celebrating mood, at least not during the first 5 days. He is extraordinarily displeased with what we humans have chosen to do with our planet. But what we are witnessing in this storm, just as what we witnessed in the terrible tornadoes that ripped across the middle of America, and as we have seen with the devastating increase in earthquakes that have occurred around the world, is one of these birth pangs that tells us that the end is near. In a related story, because of the false nature of religion and of people claiming to speak in his name, doing business in his name, deceiving many, leaving people perplexed, we read that the Council of Copt Christians in Egypt is set to vote for a successor to their pope, who died in March. The two bishops and three monks, there are two bishops and three monks who are on a short list to become the 118th head of the region's largest Christian minority. The council will pick three, writing their names on separate pieces of paper that will be placed in a box on the altar of St. Mark's Cathedral in Cairo. Now, mind you, there are no saints in Yah's perspective. Any reverence to a deceased person is an abomination from God's perspective. But nonetheless, they're going to be put in a box on St. Mark's Cathedral in Cairo. Then a blindfolded child will be asked to draw out one of the names on the 4th of November, thereby picking the new pope. This, of course, means that the blind will be leading the blind. It is one of the things that Yah said would happen, is that the blind would lead the blind, the deaf would speak to the deaf. The individual chosen will become the new Coptic pope and will be enthroned in a ceremony. The Coptic Church has about 16 million members worldwide, and Copts make up currently about 10% of Egyptians' population of 80 million people. Before the Muslim onslaught of that nation, they represented 100% of the people. But you see, Islam does not tolerate a rival. Over time, the Copts have been decimated to the point that only 1 in 10 of Egypt's population is currently a Christian Copt. I'm Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Good morning and welcome back to Shattering Myths. We ended our news segment of our program yesterday talking about an article that appeared in the New York Times, which began, imagine, a presidential candidate who spoke with blunt honesty about American problems, dwelling on measures by which the United States lags behind its peers. They then asked, how far would this truth-telling candidate get? Their answer, nowhere fast. If you recall, we talked about the fact that such a candidate is all but unimaginable in the political culture that exists in America. And that really is a problem. That means that there is no one as a leading spokesperson in this country for the truth. Not in the media, not in politics, not in the pulpits of America's religious institutions, most certainly not in our academic institutions. There is no one who is going to gain any degree of popularity, who is going to rise above the crowd and tell Americans the truth. And the reason is because Americans don't want to know the truth. And the same could be said of those listening in Australia, in New Zealand, in the UK, throughout most of Western Europe. It can most certainly be said to those who live in the Middle East. People don't want to know the truth, and since they are opposed to the truth, no one speaking the truth is going to gain any popularity. The reality is that Americans in particular, and I'm sure this can also be said of Brits, will not allow any serious presidential or prime minister candidate to speak to them about the problems that occur in their countries. Because in America, the only kind of candidate that can prevail is one who reassures the voters. Americans demand constant reassurance, is what the New York Times reports, which means that Americans are awesomely insecure. Fact is, America is the most in debt of any nation in the history of the world. It's not the most prosperous nation anymore. America is not the most peaceful nation, it's the most militaristic nation in the history of humankind. America is not the most free, it is actually the most incarcerated nation in human history. For instance, Democrats are more loath, this article reads, than Republicans to look squarely at the government debt crisis that is indisputably looming with the aging of baby boomers and the ballooning of Medicare. Yes, it's already $16 trillion and growing at $1 trillion a year. And we have just now begun the upward spike of this problem with Social Security and Medicare rising rapidly. And very soon, we're going to have to start paying interest of 5 to 10% on that growing to $17 trillion worth of debt because we have destroyed the value of our currency. This is going to have major consequences. Republicans, this article reads, are more reluctant than the Democrats to acknowledge the rise of global temperatures and its causes and consequences. Now, we won't get to it today, but perhaps tomorrow, that should the winds not blow down the our lines of communication, and hopefully the show will be live tomorrow, but there's probably a 50% chance that it will not be, because while there is climate change occurring in a dramatic fashion around the globe, and particularly here in North America, there is no global warming. It is a myth. And we will report on the myth of global warming in an upcoming show because it has been shown that for the past 15 years there hasn't been any temperature increase around the globe. But anyway, according to the New York Times, global warming is a fact and that Republicans don't want to talk about it. Both parties, it is fair to say, prefer to consider neither trend too deeply. Let me tell you how bad our deficit is. If we were to have a politician that were to say the only way that we can resolve the issue of our deficit is to reduce government spending and cities and states and federal government spending by 20% a year for 5 straight years. Now, you would say, well, 20% a year, 5 straight years, it would be zero. No, it's not the way that compounding works. A 20% reduction 5 years in a row would leave government spending at one-third of its current level. But if we do not take that dramatic a whack at Social Security, Medicare, and defense, which are the big three in the federal side of things, then our deficit will continue to grow rather than be diminished. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths.
Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country. Going back about a year and a half ago, I began to learn about the incredible health effects of